Relationships are hard. Even the best of friendships. Even the deepest and most intimate of associations. Places of real attachment and love, they are also places at times of trial and challenge. Think about your relationships with people that you've been close to. Maybe a beloved, well, I guess I'm on here. Maybe a beloved parent or your children. Close friends, trusted work colleagues. The closeness of these relationships make them even more tangled at times. Intricate, involved, demanding. Because people get to see each other close up in those intimate places, real close, where the blemishes and the flaws are most noticeable, where the gaps in character are most evident, where the limitations in a person's thinking and acting are most detectable. When we live close to each other, we have to live with each other's foundational defects. And that's not easy. People have to live with ours, and we have to live with theirs. Or not. Of course, we can withdraw from relationships with people. We can create a very small circle around ourselves, maybe even a circle of one. Me. You. We could withdraw into ourselves as a way of dealing with the profound flaws we find in others. Could we not? Jesus Christ never trusted human nature. He never seemed to forget about the fact of sin in life. Always took sin into account in his dealings with others. Recognized that there is a basic selfishness in people. Sometimes which can lead to a wickedness, maybe something downright hateful or wrong in people at times. Jesus never trusted human nature, but he was never cynical or suspicious about it either. He never allowed his understanding of human nature to determine how he would live with others. Rather, Jesus weighed up the potential in people, their human potential in a person, weighed up their capacity for good and their capacity for evil, and yet he still lived and loved people in the midst of the reality of the sinfulness of life. And of course, it did come back to bite him on certain occasions, didn't it? People seemed to willfully, at times, maybe even intentionally misunderstand him. His disciples were constantly on the outs, missing the moment of what he was about. Jesus had to live with people's limitations, had to learn how to accept and reconcile himself to people's moral failures, failures that could grow to a maniacal, sinful intent in life. Like one of his closest associates, going to the authorities and betraying him and his mission for money. Having a close friend sell you out for personal gain, that's a pretty big one when you think about it. Or how about his closest of all his disciples denying Jesus at the time of his trial and need? In fact, the whole team of his disciples scampering off when the going got real tough. I think most of us are not reconciled to sin. We're aware of it, of course, but we don't factor it into our relationships with each other. We don't factor into our relationships people's basic selfishness and self-centered ways. We're shocked when we see how people can treat other people. We're shocked when we see how people can treat us, even. The indiscriminate selfishness and the callously self-centered ways that people bring into their relationships with other people. Or we can talk about the lofty virtues of human nature. We can applaud the greatness of human potential. And it's true, there are heroic ways in which people love each other and care for each other. It can be very inspiring to watch. Yet there is still something in human nature that will mockingly laugh in the face of every principle we have about people. We see it in our own relationships. We see it in how people treat each other. We see it in images that come from places like Ukraine. It unnerves us, I think, in powerful ways. Causes us to recoil away from others at times. Someone sent out an email last week in my name to the members and friends of Trillium. They altered my email address by adding one letter to my name. Hardly noticeable. They said I was in a prayer meeting, that I needed gift cards. Could you help me out? Could you scratch off the code on the back of the gift card and send it to me? It was a scam, of course. It was taking advantage of people's basic sense of goodness and trust. People trust their pastor, their minister. They want to help others. And the scam was taking advantage of others' people's trust and sense of desire to be good to others. They're taking advantage of people's trust and using it for their own personal gain. It is outrageous. Think about it, stealing in such a way like that. I was talking with a healthcare provider a couple of years back. This person had become disenchanted with her profession because the profession she was involved with was more about upselling services to people than taking care of them and their needs. And she didn't want to be a part of a system that would use people in this way. She wanted to serve, not to be served. It's easy to get cynical about things, isn't it? About people, about institutions, about the ways things get done, about what motivates people to do things. It's tempting to make certain kinds of compromises, too. Since everyone is out for themselves, it seems, since everyone is consumed with their own self-interest, focused on self-promotion of one type or another, and getting their way in life, well, why not just join in and get yours? Might as well get your fair share then. Makes situations bend to what you want them to be. Simple fact is that all human beings can be quite selfish and self-centered. Their self-centered view of life can dominate them. I call this unlove. And all the ways, that's all the ways we live separate from love. This perspective can become at times downright malevolent and hateful in people. Allow someone just to cross a border and conquer another people because they want to. And this way of unlove can take us a long way down that path. Selfishness and egotism interferes with our personal relationships. Because if we're not ready for the reality of sin, if we don't understand the reality of unlove in our lives with each other, if we're not astute to understanding human nature and its glory and darkness, we'll either compromise with it and allow the unlove in life to multiply through us, or we'll judge it and recoil from it and live diminished lives with diminished relationships, because there is no relationship in this world. There's no relationship in your life or mine that does not have unlove at work in it, does not have sin at work in it. It's just part of the deal of living with people. And if we allow unlove in life to determine who and what we will love, then we are really limiting our capacity for any kind of love in life. There is no place in life without unlove. And if we allow unlove to determine our willingness to love, then, well, we're pretty stuck, aren't we? Oswald Chambers says, "Have you taken this hour and the power of darkness into account in your life?" That is, have you taken unlove into account in your relationships with others, especially your close relationships with people? Are you astute in your assessment of other people, recognizing and distinguishing the genuine love you share with them from all the chaff of unlove that you find along the way? Do you demand moral perfection of love from others as a condition of giving your own love? Do you insist that others be saintly towards you first before you might be willing to be saintly toward them? There's Judas coming to Jesus in the dark with a bunch of hooligans set on arresting him. There's Judas going up to Jesus and giving him a kiss. A kiss. This is the sign that he gives to the hooligans of who to arrest. Think about that. Judas uses the gesture of kissing as a way of marking Jesus out for betrayal. Kissing is a sign of incredible intimacy. It can be a kiss of romantic nature. It can be a kiss of deep affection for somebody, of a tender-heartedness towards them. There's Judas using the sign of love as a way of betraying Jesus. He imitates love and uses this moment in a most powerful way for unlove. This kind of betrayal is the hardest, always the hardest, the most painful, when people who are close to each other allow something other than love to manifest in their relationship with each other, allow unlove to gain control in the situation. I remember talking with a friend years ago whose wife had had an affair. He just couldn't bring himself to accept the situation. He couldn't believe that the woman he thought he knew would do such a thing. He still loved his wife, but he couldn't reconcile his love for his wife with what had happened. It ate him up. He tried to forgive her and let it go, but he couldn't do it. You see, he hadn't taken into account the hour in darkness, the hour in the power of darkness. He hadn't taken into account in his relationship and his marriage. He had a rather naive and glib understanding of human nature. He hadn't reconciled to himself to the reality of the glory and darkness that lives in all people, including himself and his spouse. Jesus didn't trust human nature, and neither should we. Yet Jesus was never cynical or suspicious about human nature because he had absolute trust. He had absolute trust in what he could do for human nature. He was confident in the power of God's love to lift people up and beyond the reality of unlove in their life, beyond the unlove and sin that lives in people's hearts, in their minds, in your heart and my mind, my mind and your heart. We who follow Jesus are called to be pure and virtuous people, people who live in the confidence of what love can do in any and every situation in life, including what love can do in us. A love that transcends our self-interests, transcends our egotism. We're not called to be innocent. Scripture does not call us to be innocent. Innocence is a characteristic of a child. We're not called to be naive in our assessment of human nature, in our assessment of other people. We're not called to be glib in our appraisal of each other. We know that people can do great things and people can do horrible things. We know that people can love and they can unlove. It's this knowledge that shields the pure man or woman from harm. It's this knowledge that allows the pure person to understand the full range of human capacity, yet commits that person nonetheless to the way of love and trust that the power of love that works itself through us can bring all things to good. It's holy love, God's love, that we trust today, not human nature. We come today to celebrate God's perfect love for all. We come here to celebrate the power of love, not the human nature that lives within each of us. Judas betrays Jesus with a kiss, and the hooligans try to grab him. And in that moment, one of the disciples takes a sword and he swings it at the head of the chief priest's servant, and he cuts off his ear. But Jesus will have none of this. The unlove that's being shown to him in the moment by the hooligans, the unlove that's being returned in kind by his disciples, has nothing to do with his mission or purpose. Jesus is reaching for something different. And he is not dissuaded from trusting the power of God's love, even in this moment, this ugly moment. Do we trust God's love? Do you trust God's love in your life? Do you really trust God's love? Do you believe that God's love can bring all things to good in your life? Every hard place that you've endured, every challenging moment in your relationships with others, do you trust that God's power of love can bring all things to good in your life? It's always the case, you know, that unlove in life is our determination to wrest control from God because we don't trust God's love in the moment. All the sin in life, all the heartache, the brokenness of the world around us, all the unlove in life, from the most benign to the most horrendous, comes out of our lack of trust in God's love. Paul writes in Romans 8, probably the most powerful words of Scripture, of the whole Bible. He says this, "And we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose." What Paul is saying is that we who work for God's love in life can trust in the power and the effectiveness of God's love. It will be worked out for good. That's the promise given to us. We don't need to try to control the outcome of God's love in life. We can surrender instead to God's love in life and let it have its way through us, because it's going to take all things to a good place ultimately. How does Paul know that this is true, that God's love works for the good in life? Because he recognized it in Jesus' walk to the cross. Jesus surrendered himself to the power of God's love in the face of human evil and human wickedness. In the midst of sin in the world, in the reality of unlove, Jesus nonetheless surrendered himself to God's love, certain that God's love would bring all things to good, including his death. A most tragic circumstance for sure, but God can make all things into something good, something beautiful. Something beautiful, something good. All my confusion, he understood. All I had to offer him was brokenness and strife, but he made something beautiful of my life. Jesus proves that true. God took the strife and brokenness of the world that culminated in his crucifixion and made something incredibly beautiful out of it. He made a new human being, a new human nature, shaped and guided by love. And that's what we're called to. It's what's being offered to us today. This new human nature is being offered to you and me, that's built and shaped by love, not by selfishness or egotism. Relationships are hard. Even the best of friendships, even the most intimate of places between people, because that's where the way of love is worked out, even in the midst of the unlove. It's worked out in the practice of life between people. The reality of love happens in every relationship between a beloved parent, with a child, a sibling, a close friend, a trusted work colleague, a neighbor, a church member, a stranger. Jesus says you can work out the way of love even with your enemy. That's how powerful God's love is. Love happens in the midst of the sin and the unlove of this world. You know, up close we get to see each other's blemishes and flaws. They become very noticeable to us. We see the gaps in each other's character. They're, it's most evident. We see the limitations in our thinking and acting with each other. They're most detectable, but we are not deterred, not because we don't see it, We do. Not because we trust in human nature, we don't. We can endure and grow and triumph because we focus instead on the power of God's love in us. That changes everything. That changes you. It can change me too. So let's get practicing with each other. This is the place of practice. This is the place where we get to be real and committed to the practice of love. Even in the midst of each other's sinfulness and unlove, we can live out the practice of love, calling each other to step up in love to the best of we can be. And this is what Trillium, I think, is all about. Awakening the Christ light in each other and shining it in the world.